This is a podcast from the children's radio station Fun Kids. Listen on DAB digital radio across the UK or online at funkidslive.com.
Welcome to the Fun Kids Science Weekly then. This is where we have a look at the most amazing, weird and wonderful things in the universe. Now, my name's Dan. Hello. Thank you so much for giving us a listen. Today, we're talking about the coldest city in the world and why on earth people still choose to live there. And no. If you live in the UK, it's not where you live. Although it does feel like it this week. It's been a chilly one, hasn't it? It's in Russia. Doesn't take a genius to work that one out. Also, we'll hear about a signal that scientists have detected from the first stars that ever existed. And I warn you now, we're going to get a little bit gross later on. We're investigating what happens to all of your food that you've eaten once it's gone through your body and even been digested. First, it's time for a brand new series on the show. It's called Britain's Digital Railways, where Bex from Fun Kids and I, we travel all around the country to explore how our trains work, how they get from place to place, and how they're improving in the future.
Britain's Digital Railway. Whether it's passengers on a fast intercity service, a branch line to the coast, or commuters travelling to work on a tram or tube, Britain's railways are certainly busy. Bex and Dan are joining the passengers and learning that the number of people using the railways is expected to grow, and that things are going to have to change.
Hey Dan, how long till our train gets here?
Another 10 minutes? Why don't you find us something to watch online whilst we're waiting?
Oh, this looks cool. This video is called The Digital Railway. Let's check it out.
Today, Britain's railway network carries over 3 million people every day. That's 1.3 billion journeys each year. And with the population set to increase, within 20 years, there will be double the amount of rail passengers.
Oh my goodness! Where will all these passengers go? Maybe we'll all be like squashed in, like sardines maybe? Or maybe they might make double-decker trains? One of those? I think I've got it though. Maybe we'll have to hang on to the train roof, you know, a bit like ninjas in an action movie.
Yeah, chill out, Dan. Although actually, no, it might be quite cool to hang out on the roof like a ninja.
That's certainly cool.
I mean, I'm sure they'll just make more trains and just shove them on the track. Then Bob's your uncle, room for everyone.
Won't that cause a load of train traffic jams though? And affect the environment?
Yeah, I suppose. You might need to come up with a way to make the railways super safe and super clean with all the extra trains.
What if each train could carry more people? You could perhaps get rid of the seats and just make everyone stand up?
Yeah, come on. You moan more than anybody if you can't get a seat.
Fair point. I do like a seat, I can't lie. Maybe trains could just go faster. You know, fill them with rocket fuel and let them go at like 300 miles an hour. That way they can make journeys faster and take all the extra passengers.
Yeah, but to go really fast, you want the track to be as straight and as flat as possible, right? I mean, too many curves and hills, you might have to slow down. Just think, if you go too fast on a bumpy track, you might actually end up in orbit.
Gosh, it's tough, isn't it?
Or maybe they'll just build like a million more miles of super track. That way there could be room for tons of new trains.
Just imagine, though, when you look out of the window, all you'd see was track and trains. Cool, if you like trains.
Yeah, I mean, not everyone is gonna want trains zooming past their house, and building a load of new tracks is gonna be expensive, right? So that doesn't really sound like a solution either.
I suppose that means they're gonna have to work with the track that already exists.
Dan and Bex are right. The railway network has to work with what it's got. Luckily, like with many other parts of life, technology has advanced to help. With careful planning, the capacity on the network can be increased. That means more trains carrying more passengers. It's a challenge that engineers are excited about, and one they're calling the digital railway. It might sound a bit like a computer game, but it just means using the very latest tech developments to get more trains on the network, travelling more efficiently and safely.
Right on time. Come on, hurry up.
Let me guess. You want to bag a seat.
Britain's Digital Railway. With support from the Royal Academy of Engineering. Find out more at funkidslive.com/railway.
We've got loads more from our brand new Digital Railways series that you can catch up on for free. Get out your phone or your tablet, open up the Fun Kids app. Also, download them wherever you get your podcasts from, you know, places like iTunes, and you can always listen at funkidslive.com. Right, it's time to spin the big wheel of shout-outs and see which segment it lands on this week. And that's really important, you see, because on each segment is a name. There's loads of them on there, and it's the name of a person who has left this show a review on the iTunes podcast store. And whoever it lands on gets a hello on the show, dead simple. It's spinning, it's gone past Darren and Lee and Max and Becca, and it's landing on Joe! There we go, it stopped on you, Joe. Hello to you. He listens in the car with his dad, and he loves learning about dinosaurs and space. Fantastic, Joe. So do I. That's kind of why I do the show. Brilliant. Thank you so much for leaving us a review. Now, if you want a shout out next week and your name to be read out and popped on the giant Fun Kid shout out wheel we've got in the studio, you need to leave the show a review. It's dead easy. Find the Fun Kid Science Weekly on the iTunes podcast store and drop us 5 stars, please. It's the Fun Kid Science Weekly. Now, this week's special guest takes the crazy kind of madcap science ideas that are knocking around your brain and brings them to life in front of your eyes. Her name is Ruth. She's from the YouTube channel Kids Invent Stuff. Ruth, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for coming on. Now tell me, Kids Invent Stuff, where did the idea for this channel come from?
Well, Sean and I, who started the channel, we have done a lot of work in schools, and we realised that kids come up with the best invention ideas, but often they don't really know what to do with them, or adults don't listen to them and take them seriously. So we thought we'd set up a YouTube channel where each month we set a different invention challenge. 5 to 11 year olds can submit their invention ideas, and then we choose one to build, test and bring to life.
And what happens after someone has sent you an idea? So you've got the blueprints in your hand or on the screen. Then how do you make that a reality? What goes on behind the scenes?
Well, there's lots of trial and error. Things often go wrong, but we try and work out the best way to bring that to life. So, for example, we've built a fire and water shooting piano. We've built shoes that walk on water. And some inventions are quite kind of simpler to work out how we're going to bring them to life, and others take a little bit more time.
Talk to me about the science behind this trial and error then. If someone asked me to invent shoes that walks on water, it would take me a long time to know where to start. How do you have the initial idea of where you're going to move it, how you're going to move this forward?
Well, usually we start off with kind of a basic prototype. With the shoes, for example, it involves me getting wet quite a bit, falling in the water, trying to work out how much. So for example, with the shoes, it was all about them being buoyant and being able to sit on the water with me stood on top of them. So that was kind of a crude calculation of me stood in the sea. And if you watch the build video, you'll see me stood in the sea falling off a lot, trying to work out how much they need to be able to float by. And some of it is kind of, we know the science. So for example, when we've made a tank that fires out a net. So we knew we'd seen that it was possible, but obviously getting that to work correctly took a while. Our kind of four kind of corners of the net were held by Sprite bottles, very technical. And so it was just trying to get those weights right. And so often it is just trying. It's, you know, having a go, seeing it doesn't work, thinking, okay, what can we change and have another go, really?
And your inventions, as you say, some use Sprite bottles and other use pianos and flamethrowers. So there's quite a gulf in the things that you end up using. What do you reckon's the most everyday object that you've put into the most incredible invention?
Well, I suppose one of the kind of most everyday objects, although it's a big one, that we had to buy has been a car. So, yeah, we've had to, you know, you see cars driving around all over the place. But we had to buy one of those and cut the roof off it to make a crazy car, which was invented by Connor, which had a seat in the back of it that you kind of lifted up, burst through the roof, and you could drive along, sat on top of the car. And obviously to do that, we had to buy a car, which is, you know, pick up a car relatively easy. but yeah, that was a little bit random.
But you need to cut into it, right? If they're going to burst through this. So there can't be much trial and error with that. You'll be spending a lot of money on cars.
Yeah, so you won't attempt at that. I've never been so scared to grind the roof off a car before, knowing that there's one attempt and one attempt only. So we use all sorts of really simple things, from bits of net and Sprite bottles and bits of wood, all the way through to, tires off trikes or, inflatable dolphins. Lots and lots of really random everyday items. And most of the things that we build with are things that you can just buy off the internet.
Now, you must get sent a whole raft of inventions, some amazing and incredible, some possibly not so great. Is there anything that just looks outstanding on paper and it would be brilliant to see in the world every day, but you just can't figure out how to get it done?
I was a massive fan of the candy floss roofed car. I remember when I saw that, I was like, yes, that's genius. But I haven't quite worked out how you would put that in place without it getting kind of, melting in the rain and, all getting a little bit sticky.
What's the most fun thing that you've actually built?
Oh, every single one is kind of fun in its own way, because it's not just about kind of building the invention, but going out and testing it. So, for example, when we built the snow cannon, we went to Cornwall, which very rarely gets snow, and went on the beach and covered the beach in the snow. When we tested our dodgeball machine, we got a team of people to play against it and get hit in the face by lots of dodgeballs. So I don't know if I can necessarily choose a favourite. I think they all kind of do their own job. It's hard to compare them against each other.
And you're an inventor in your own right as well, away from this. I mean, you won Young Engineer of Britain, right? This was all because you were set a project at school, but you didn't quite like it, so you kind of took it in its own direction. Can you tell us more about that story and then what it's become?
Yeah, so the Stair Study was my GCSE resistant materials project and was originally designed to help my teacher walk up and down his own stairs. And that in itself kind of threw me into the world of engineering. And that was how Sean and I met, actually. Sean won the same award I did a few years later. And so we're both kind of inventors of lots of very different crazy things. But Stair City itself is sold in the UK and is licensed to other countries. And from a GCSE project, I think my first prototype was a scaffolding pole and block of wood. And to have seen it gone from that to a product that people use every day is a little bit insane, really.
Thank you so much for coming on the show, Ruth. Very quickly, tell us how we can get involved with Kids Invent Stuff. What's the YouTube channel? How do we send things to you? What goes on?
So our YouTube channel is youtube.com/KidsInventStuff. We set a monthly challenge every second Saturday of the month. And you can submit your invention ideas at kidsinventstuff.com. And we're found on most social medias at kidsinventstuff.
Thank you so much. I promise you need to get on this. If you've got any idea knocking around your brain that you just think there's no way it's going to happen, Ruth, she will make it done for you. Ruth, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Now, we're getting a little bit gross in just a sec. I am warning you. We're finding out how your body filters out all the waste that you eat. First, it's time to get cold, very cold, in this week's Dangerous Dan. Because we're talking about the most mean and deadly things in the universe. And over here, in the UK this week, we've been almost frozen over, pelted by blizzards and covered in snow by the beast from the east. So I thought we'd talk about people who have it worse than us and chat about the coldest city in the world. I mean, no surprise, it's in Russia. It's called Yakutsk, and it's recorded the world's coldest temperature outside of Antarctica. The difference between this city, though, and the South Pole is people actually live in Yakutsk. 200,000 of them working in the mining industry deep in the heart of Russia. Now get this, in September, the temperature drops below freezing 0 degrees, and it won't climb back up into positive numbers until May. In fact, in January, the heart of their winter, the highest temperature that it usually reaches is about minus 36 degrees Celsius. Just bear in mind, in the UK, over the last week, it's been about minus 8. So that's much colder. The record low for January in Yakutsk is minus 63 degrees. and people are sensible. When they visit the city in the winter for work, they won't turn off their engines the whole time they're there. They can be there for 2 weeks at a time, but they don't turn it off for a second, because if they do, it may freeze over and they'll be stuck there for the whole winter. You're listening to the Fun Kids Science Weekly with me, Dan, and are you ready for the most disgusting part of any show in history? I know I am. Quite excited, actually, because it's not just gross the whole time. No, don't worry, I'm making the most of it. It's also going to learn a lot as well, because it's with one of our favourite geniuses at Fun Kids, Professor Hallux. This is from his Physiology Fix-Up series, where he's trying to make your body better. And today, we're learning how you filter out the waste.
Hallux's Physiology Fix-Up.
Just a few more tweaks. That should do it. Nurse Nanobot, check it out.
What's up, Hallux?
Finally, I've completed my greatest invention of all, a brand new urinary system for the human body. Let me introduce the Biofiltration Extrapolator.
It's a sieve. A motorised sieve. And actually, my sieve. That's the one I rinse my fungal spores out in. I want it back.
Well, what it is now is a new and improved way for a human body to get rid of waste. No more mucky trips to the toilet. With the Biofiltration Extrapolator, everything will be filtered and rinsed away.
Professor, the urinary system is a very complicated part of the body. It has all sorts of jobs to do and can only do these jobs because of the way it's constructed and the way it works with other parts of the body.
I know, and this time I'm quietly confident to put it to the test.
Loading physiology file. Urinary system, job one. Kidneys are kept busy, making sure that blood has just the right amount of water in it. They extract water that isn't needed, along with waste from the bloodstream. This watery waste is turned into urine, commonly known as wee.
There's more to this urinary system than I thought. I hadn't connected it up to the bloodstream at all.
Systems in the body often need to be connected to other organs and systems in order to carry out their jobs properly.
Physiology fail.
Urinary system. Job 2. Ureters transport urine from the kidneys to the bladder in 2 neat tubes.
There's nothing neat about that sieve, Professor. I think it sprung a leak. Look, water's going everywhere. Never mind a tube, we need a mop.
Physiology fail.
Maybe a sieve with smaller holes.
Or maybe not a sieve at all.
There's still a couple of jobs left. Hang on.
Urinary system, job 3. The bladder's job is to store urine. Most of the time, you can decide when to wee, and at that time, muscles tell the bladder to release the urine, or muscles can squeeze to stop yourselves from weeing until you get to the toilet.
Well, there's no stopping this waste. Didn't you think about connecting it to some sort of control mechanism?
Well, I am now.
Physiology fail.
Urinary system, job 4. The urethra carries urine from the bladder to the outside of the body. Because its opening is very small, it's normally easy to wee without making a big mess.
A definite fail, Hallux. Turn the blooming thing off.
Physiology fail.
I think that much is clear. It's useless. Unless you want your laboratory 2 feet deep in wee.
I don't think anyone wants that, Nanobot.
But cheer up, Hallux. We've learned a lot today. Studying physiology can help us understand all sorts of living things better, whether it's a tree or a Tyrannosaurus Rex.
Wow. Imagine how much wee a T-Rex would make.
Well, getting rid of waste is something that most living things have to do. When we understand how the job is done in one type of living thing, sometimes that knowledge can be used to make sense of other living things.
So it's not time wasted then after all. Wasted. Do you get it?
Ha ha. Very funny, Professor.
Hallux's Physiology Fix-Up. With support from the Physiological Society. Find out more at funkidslive.com/Hallux.
Now, in a sec, we'll find out how soon bad phone signal could be a thing of the past. First, though, let me remind you that if you've got a science question that's nagging around, it's bugging you, it's racking around your brain, well, let me know, because I can get some help for you. I don't know, maybe it's something that your teachers have said that can't possibly be true and they've read the wrong textbook, or maybe it's something that your best mate has told you in the playground and you're just sure it's another one of their lies trying to catch you out. Well, I can help. Right, send me your science question. Send it over to my page on the Fun Kids website, and I'll ask a proper genius expert for you in the next few weeks. I promise it doesn't matter if it's silly, if it's serious, as long as it's about science, I want to hear it. You can ask me your question right now. Get to my page over at funkidslive.com. It's time to have a look at all the science stories that have been in the news this week. Now, scientists say that they have observed a mark in the sky from the first stars to shine ever. You see, a small telescope in the Australian outback was tuned in to detect the earliest evidence ever for hydrogen, and they found some, which they think was touched. This hydrogen, they think it was touched by the first stars that ever existed in the universe, which was only 180 million years after the Big Bang. Also, small satellites will soon help mobile phones work in places that usually service doesn't reach. Low-cost, space-based mobile phone services will be a reality thanks to nano-satellites that will bounce your voice between satellites in space back to the person on Earth that you're calling. So I guess no longer can you ever avoid that annoying person who keeps calling you. And finally, researchers from America have used a new scanning technique to reveal a hidden painting underneath one of Pablo Picasso's greatest works of art. Underneath the Crouching Woman painting is another oil painting of the whole of Barcelona, which Picasso started off with. The new X-ray fluorescent system is a cheaper alternative to other art scanning, and it's portable, so any gallery can use it. I don't know, maybe they want to find some more hidden treasures themselves. It's time for Techno Mum on the Fun Kids Science Weekly. In every episode, she's investigating the technology behind the things that you use every single day. And today, we're finding out how your phone stops sneaky intruders getting into it.
Techno Mum's Tech Line, with support from the Institution of Engineering and Technology.
Got a call. Hello, you're through to Techno Mum's Tech Line. What's your techno question?
Dad's mobile phone has a fingerprint scanner to lock and unlock the screen. How does the scanner know it's his?
Ooh, great question. You see fingerprint scanners on lots of devices these days, including mobile phones. Secret codes are a great way to keep things private and safe, as you'll know if you've got a combination lock on your diary or bike. Human beings are lucky because every single person alive has their own totally unique secret code on their fingers and thumbs. On each finger pad, you can see a pattern of swirls and ridges. Yours won't match anyone else's. The first time you set the lock, you let the scanner take a picture of your fingertip. Every time you then swipe your fingertip on the reader, it takes another photo and checks the first to see if they match. If they do, you're in. Sometimes electrical currents are used instead of light. Don't worry, they don't give you a shock. You might know that electricity is carried around gadgets and machines in channels called circuits. They're like roads. If there's a gap in the circuit, the electricity can't flow, just like cars can't cross a broken bridge. Some scanners use circuits which are completed or filled by the bumps of the fingerprint. The pressure activates switches which help the device put together an image of all the ridges and can compare them to its original.
Techno Mum's Tech Line, with support from the Institution of Engineering and Technology. Find out more at funkislive.com.
You can catch up on all our Techno Mum episodes and adventures for free on your phone or tablet. Go to the place you usually get your podcasts from, you know, iTunes, something like that. They're also all on the free Fun Kids app, which you can find in the App Store. And you can always listen at funkidslive.com. That is it for another episode of the Fun Kids Science Weekly, then. Thank you so much for giving us a listen. Remember, if you loved it, give us a review on iTunes. You might get a shout out on next week's show. Also, you can send in your science questions to me. I'll get them answered by a proper genius expert. Do that at funkidslive.com. And you can find all of our amazing science series on the free Fun Kids app. Wherever you get your podcast from, you know, places like iTunes, and you can listen at funkidslive.com, and you can hear Fun Kids all over the country on your DAB digital radio, on that free Fun Kids app, and as always at funkidslive.com.
So that was a podcast from the children's radio station Fun Kids. Listen on DAB digital radio across the UK or online at funkidslive.com.